radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Time, but space is a place that only a human being locates. Where there's so much information to take, then you enter an entirely new place. Once you get off the internet, become World Wide Web.
Welcome to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind. I'm your host and facilitator, Junius Ricardo Stanley, inviting you to stay tuned for interesting interviews, news you can use, and programming designed with you in mind. Free your mind, the rest will follow, right here on the Cyberspace Sanctuary, on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul.
Cyberspace is the place. Cyberspace is the place.
And welcome to another edition of the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind, here on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. My name is Junius Ricardo Stanton, and we thank you for logging on, and we have a very exciting show for you today. We started off the program with our message in the music, the Commodores, Heroes, and we have a real live hero as our guest, Dr. Eugene Richardson, who's a hero as an educator, former school administrator, principal, and a member of the famed Tuskegee Airmen. And we'll speak with him following these messages, so don't go anywhere. You're logged on to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind. My name is Junius Ricardo Stanton. You're listening to Rainbow Soul on the Blake Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Greetings to the Internet Radio family. This is Reverend Valentine speaking. You know, for nearly 30 years, I have had the distinct experience of being interviewed over every medium of communication available to the public. And except for the metaphysical underground, I can think of no other electronic venue that has been more progressive, more innovative, more insightful, more diligent, more diverse in its demographics, and more courageously supportive of the truth than this ever-growing phenomenon called Internet radio. And this is precisely why I'm here to tell you that it is so vital that you give your wholehearted support to it. Tell a friend. In fact, tell 2, 3, and 4 of your friends. If you are a business owner, support Internet radio by telling your customers and constituents all about it. Let them know that there is a legitimate and important substitute to all of the prefabricated, super-sensitive garbage polluting our public airways today. Don't allow the mass media to continue to treat you like a mindless consumer drone. Enhance your awareness. Indulge your critical thinking, your reasoning, and your analysis. Do as I do. Log on, listen in, and then let it be known all about your internet radio experience. Chimatep, beloved family, thank you for listening. Walk in light.
We'd like to welcome everybody checking in from Real Media Player, from Windows Media Player, from iTunes. We want to encourage everyone to log into our website, which is blakeradio.com, and become familiar with how you can access our broadcast directly from our website. And vice versa, those of you who check in directly from the Blake Radio Network, become familiar with how you can also access us through Real Media Player, through Windows Media Player, and iTunes by logging into their radio tuner guides and doing a search for us in the talk radio genre. You're listening to Rainbow Soul, talk radio at its best.
Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Hi, I'm Junius Ricardo Stanton, inviting you to join me in financially supporting the Blake Radio Network on a regular basis. We need your continuing patronage to help the Blake Radio Network remain alive and thriving both now and well into the future. There are several easy ways you can send your contribution. To use PayPal, click on the help link on the Blake Radio Network's website at www.blakeradio.com. Or you can go directly to the PayPal website and click the send money link. Type in rainbowsoul at blakeradio.com as the email address, and Unlimited Ventures as the payee. Then follow the instructions. To send a check or money order, make it out to Unlimited Ventures, care of Neil Blake, and mail it to 73 Ireland Place, that's Ireland Place, Suite 109, Amityville, Amityville, New York, 11701. It's easy, painless, and uncomplicated. And you'll feel great after doing it, knowing you're keeping the Blake Radio Network alive and on the cutting edge of media technology.
I'm Junius Ricardo Stanton, thanking you in advance for your support.
Gracious, Professor Griffin, you're listening to Junius Ricardo Stanton. Straight up, we're teaching you all those things you need to know from the neck up, all right? We're definitely doing a checkup from the neck up. This is Professor Griffin, Public Enemy, the ex-minister. I'm out. Peace.
Coming out of the break, we heard Seal with his version of the Steve Miller Band, Fly Like an Eagle, a recording that was made famous by the Steve Miller Band. And that sets the stage for today's guest on our program, Dr. Eugene Richardson, retired principal, former educator, and a Tuskegee Airman. He graduated from their flight school in 1944. Then by the time he went on to complete the training to be a military aviator, fighter pilot, the war was over, so he did not go to Europe or the Pacific. But nonetheless, he is a Tuskegee Airman with all the rights and privileges pertaining thereto. And I've had the pleasure of knowing him for quite a while, and he introduced me to several of his compatriots who were also members of the Greater Philadelphia chapter of the Tuskegee Airmen, and I had them on my radio program when I was doing terrestrial radio many, many years ago. And with the release of the most recent film about them, Red Tails, I felt it would be apropos to have him on and talk about his experiences, talk about what that was like. And so this is a special treat for you on this edition of the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind. So stay tuned for Dr. Eugene Richardson. Our guest is Dr. Eugene Richardson, the former educator, former school administrator, principal, and he's also a member of the Philadelphia chapter of the Tuskegee Airmen. And I had the pleasure of meeting him, first of all, when my wife was one of his teachers at Amy Alternative Middle Years. But then I found out that he was a Tuskegee Airman, and I had him on my radio program when I was doing a program on terrestrial radio. And I got a chance to talk to him and some of the members of the Philadelphia chapter of the Tuskegee Airmen and find out their story. I was almost close to 20 years ago. That's 15, 20 years ago. So I wanted to share his story with our listeners, particularly in light of the fact that Steven Spielberg's movie Red Tails was released about a week or so ago. Welcome, Doc. How are you?
Okay, but correction, that was George Lucas.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, George Lucas.
Did the film.
Yeah.
George Lucas.
Yeah. Okay.
George Lucas put out $93 million of his dollars out of his pocket to make the movie. It just so happens that he tried for 20-some years to get this movie made. None of the other studios would pick it up. They had this notion that a movie with black characters, especially black heroes, wouldn't sell. So they wouldn't pick it up. So Lucas did it himself, having full faith and confidence in black people in the movie that he and their experience in World War II as fighter pilots.
Now,
and the movie apparently, yeah, I'm sorry.
I checked. It was doing fairly well. It was number, I think, two the first week it came out, and it's still up at the top, so it's doing okay.
And people are still calling, asking about, going to see the movie, taking groups of kids to see the movie and asking us to come and comment on the movie.
Well, that'd be
quite exciting.
Yeah. Well, give us your history. Share your background. Where were you born, and how did you get interested in aviation? Because I think that story in itself is quite fascinating.
Yeah, well, I was born in 1925. And Junius, I got my interest was peaked when I was about 5 or 6 years old. I saw an air circus put on by a group of pilots that called themselves the Blackbirds. And these five pilots performed in Mansfield, Ohio, where I was living at the time, and as I said, I was about 5 or 6 years of age. And I see these things and people getting in and out, and no, man, that was the most fascinating thing to me. You could actually get up there like the birds, up with the clouds, and circle and climb and dive and carry on. And that got me hooked. So all through my childhood, I was very much interested in, in aviation and things that had to do with aviation. I used to make model airplanes, buy clothing that looked like pilot's clothing, read books on flying, how to fly, and what makes airplanes fly, and that kind of thing. And it was quite thrilling. And then World War II came along, and I thought, oh, man, this will be a chance to get in and go to flight school, learn how to fly. Wow. But things turned out for me.
Now, my understanding is that you were young. You weren't even 18 at the time when you signed up.
Well, I took the test before I was 18. But I was called up 28 days after my 18th birthday. But I had qualified to go to flight school when I was 17. Went down to the customs house, the second in Chestnut. And, took the test. And then they bused us to Atlantic City for a physical. That was my first time seeing the ocean. when I was bused to Atlanta. Well, the Army took over a lot of those hotels on the boardwalk.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to one of those hotels, and I don't recall which one, one of those hotels for our physical examination. I passed the physical examination. I got a special pin to wear and waited until I was called up after I turned 18. I turned 18 in September of 43, and I got notice to come in on October 28th of 43.
Now, were you aware that they had black aviators, military aviators at that time?
Well, at that time, yes, because the first class of black cadets graduated in March of 1942. There were five guys in that class, including Benjamin Oliver Davis Jr.
Mm-hmm.
In the first class of black pilots that finished an Army flight school. So by the time I got in, maybe they were well aware. As a matter of fact, before I even went into service in July of 43, one of the black pilots had destroyed or had shot down a German aircraft. That was in July of 43, and I didn't go into service until, as I said, October of 43. So they were well aware of blacks in aviation by the time I got there.
Mm-hmm. Now, how long did they take? Once they called you in, was there a wait for you to go to training and flight school, or did they take you right in?
I was immediately sent to Keesler Field, outside of Biloxi, Mississippi. And we did our basic Army training, you know, how to march and carry a gun in left face, right face, and all that stuff on the rifle range. Qualified with the rifle, you know, did hiking and all those kind of standard military things. And then we took a lot of tests. We'd take psychological tests, psychomotor tests, a lot of testing. And some of the guys were eliminated even from the testing. But I got to Tuskegee proper in January of 1944. We lived on Tuskegee's campus in the Emory buildings. That was a college training detachment. They were taking guys that had not finished college, so they had courses that they wanted us to take to, you know, bring us up to, I guess, snuff with the college guys, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, how many guys were in your class? How many started out with you?
Well, my class started out with 89. And 38 of us finished.
Was this a combination of fighter and bombers, or just the fighters?
Well, the section of my class were fighters. My class had fighter and bomber pilots, but I selected to be a fighter pilot. But there were also some guys in my class that were B-25 pilots.
Mm-hmm. Well, how long was the pilot training course?
So the training took 40 weeks. There are actually four schools: pre-flight school, primary school, basic school, and the advanced school. Each one was 10 weeks long. Normally, a white cadet would go to different bases for those different schools. But for black cadets, everything was done within a small radius from Tuskegee Institute. For instance, Tuskegee Institute owned Moton Field.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's where they had a contract with the Army to give black pilots their primary flight training. There were 42 black instructors there who instructed primary student cadets on flying. Then after that, we went to Tuskegee Army Airfield that was built especially for the training of black pilots. And there we had the basic and advanced schools, and we had white military instructors at that school, those schools.
Mm-hmm. When you first went in, were your instructors black? When you first arrived at Tuskegee?
At Tuskegee, yes, the instructors were black. Uh huh.
Mm-hmm. So then, as you advanced, then you got the white instructors.
Yeah, because there were no black military instructors because there hadn't been any black pilots.
Mm-hmm.
So there were no black military instructors. Now, later during the war, when some of the guys returned from combat, they became the basic and advanced instructors. But prior to that, there were no black guys who had the military flying training.
What was the attitude of your white instructors in terms of addressing your class? Did they encourage you, or did they feel that that project was a waste of time, that experiment was a waste of time? Or had you when you came through, they knew that the lies and the stereotypes had been shattered, so by the time you came through, they were more enthusiastic?
Well, that's true. Fortunately, Junius, I heard guys talk about instructors being unfair and racially biased and that kind of thing. But I had my basic instructor was from Boston, a guy named McBride, and my advanced instructor was from New Jersey. And at the moment, I cannot recall his name. But I didn't have any of those problems that I would consider, racially motivated.
Mm-hmm.
My advanced instructor had me put me up for a check ride. I don't know why, but the check pilot, gave me excellent marks each time. So things worked out.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, I heard guys talk about, racial stuff, but I did not experience that. At the air base of Tuskegee, there was segregation on that air base, a base built by black contractors for the training of black pilots. There was segregation stuff on there. But the third commander at the Tuskegee Army Airfield, a guy named Noel Parrish, he got rid of all that stuff. No signs, no discrimination. You don't want to be on this base with the black guys, you go live in town somewhere. But on this base, no colored white signs, no discrimination of any sort. And this was a Southerner. This guy was from Kentucky, named Colonel Noel Parrish, real smart guy. Finished high school when he was 14, got his college diploma 6 months before he was 18. So a real bright, highly courageous guy. Fought the system and set up good training facilities for us.
Now, did he get any feedback or flack from the higher-ups in the Army
Air
Corps?
Oh, yes, he did. Yes, he did. Quite a bit, I understand. Quite a bit of flack. Because the people, the townspeople, the locals were complaining. You know, the custom in Alabama was that you segregate and you demean black people. Well, he didn't go for any of that stuff. And, of course, I guess the senators from that area, complained and so forth, but he stuck to his guns.
Mm-hmm. Once you left Tuskegee and you went to Mississippi, what was it like there?
No, when I left Tuskegee, we went to combat school, Walterboro, South Carolina.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And that base commander adhered to the Southern tradition of keeping things segregated. We have white military instructors, we have white combat veterans as our instructors on that base. From there, we trained in P-40s and P-47s.
Now, were you a commissioned officer at that time?
Yes. When you got your wings, upon graduation, I got my wings and my commission as a second lieutenant.
Mm-hmm.
Went home on leave, visited the family, went home on leave, and in April sometime, I went to Walterboro, South Carolina for the combat training. But then the war ended in May. 2 months later, so I didn't go to combat.
Okay. Did you remain in the service, or what did you transition?
No, only for another year. Only
what?
For another year.
Mm-hmm.
I was discharged in July of '46. I used the GI Bill and went to college.
When did the Air Corps transit to the Air Force? Was that in the works at that time, or
that was
or that
1947?
Came later? Oh, okay.
1947. The Army Air Corps became Air Force.
Mm-hmm. When I first became aware that you were a Tuskegee Airman, and there were quite a number of you in the Philadelphia chapter, and you and a couple of times I had you on the radio, you talked about reunions and conferences and conventions that you had around the world, that you were having around the world. Is that still prevalent?
Well, we have a convention every year in a different part of this country.
Mm-hmm. But didn't you go to Hawaii or somewhere? I mean, one time?
Well, not for the Army, not for the Air Force. I went, for the State Department, I went to Haiti and Canada and Kosovo and some places for the State Department.
Mm-hmm.
But that was as a civilian.
Oh, okay. All right. So tell us about the Tuskegee Airmen, the association, because you're a 501c3 organization now. So tell us about that.
Yes, well, that organization was formed in 1973, I believe it was. A large group of us met in Washington, D.C., and voted to have the civilian organization, the veterans organization. And there are currently 55 chapters around the country. And, of course, I'm in the greater Philadelphia chapter. And you don't have to be a pilot to be a member of the chapter. Many people are, even veterans, are confused and misinformed. Understand, Junius, there were 14,000 people involved with Tuskegee from 1941 through 1946. Now, out of that 14,000, those are the support personnel.
Right.
They say it takes 10 people to support a pilot and his airplane. So out of that 14,000, there were close to 1,000 who were pilots, and there are 125 who were navigator bombardiers. So anyone connected with Tuskegee during the war in any way is can be a Tuskegee Airman. We even have females who worked around the base. A lot of them did clerical work. We had nurses, a corps of nurses. Some of the females were doing clerical work. A couple ladies were parachute packers. You know, your parachute has to be taken apart and repacked every so often, once a month or, I don't know, something like that. And the women, the people who did that were females. There was also a female mechanic that actually worked on, you know, the engine parts of the airplane. They're all Tuskegee Airmen. So today, you know, since Father Time has taken our guys, we recruit younger people. Anyone with an interest in aviation and who's willing to support the goals of Tuskegee Airmen can, you know, join a chapter.
Well, how can people find out more information about the goals and where the various chapters are located?
Well, if you go online, TuskegeeAirmen.org, you know, www.TuskegeeAirmen.org, you'll get the national website, and you can pick up all information about any of the chapters in any place in the country.
Okay. Now, what types of people are you looking for to continue the legacy to join the Tuskegee Airmen?
Well, people who are interested in promoting the goals of Tuskegee Airmen, that being higher education, you know, good citizenship, willingness to help other people in their goals at higher education, or and of course we're very much interested in people who want to fly, young people who want to fly.
Mm-hmm.
We give tuition support to students who are in the flight program at Delaware State. Delaware State University was a very early, one of the early universities involved in blacks learning to fly. And Delaware State University in Dover still has a Airways science program. You still can go there and learn all about different phases of aviation, including flying, and a number of those kids have become airline pilots.
Yeah, we took a college tour down, and that was one of the schools that we visited last year, and that was one of the programs,
oh, really?
The standout programs, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you get a chance to go to the airport, their airfield?
No, nah, because we were on the last leg of it. It was an overnight tour, and we were on the last leg of that. I think we went to, like, Norfolk and Hampton the day before, and came back up and went to Maryland Eastern Shore and then Delaware State. So that was the last leg of the tour. We didn't get a chance to see that part of the campus. You also, because I remember you give scholarships and also you take contributions and donations. So how can people find out about that?
Well, they could mail contributions to Tuskegee Airmen, P.O. Box 1898 9966, Philadelphia, PA, 19119. You can also send there for information about joining our chapter.
All right. Now, that's the greater Philadelphia. What about on to find out some of the other chapters? Say, because this is internet radio, so people all over the world theoretically can hear it. So,
well, if they go online, that address I gave you, www.tuskegeeairmen.org, all the chapters are listed there.
Okay. All right.
All the studios where there are chapters.
There's a lot of buzz, and you mentioned now there are a lot of schools, a lot of young people screening the movie, coming to the movie. In fact, about a week or so ago, you participated in a screening. Unfortunately, I couldn't get there because one of our brothers had passed, so I stayed for the funeral. But the fraternity sponsored a screening. So what was the response generally of the people who saw the movie, and what type of questions did they ask you after the movie was over?
Well, it was a great thrill at seeing the movie. I heard practically nothing negative about the movie. Of course, people were very much surprised and happy to see black heroes doing honorable, heroic things, not drugs, not pimping, any of that nonsense. And they asked questions about whether the movie was true or not. Of course, it was. General things, for instance, this one the guy, Little Lightning, he did a lot of, outstanding, courageous stuff. Well, he represented a number of guys that did things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And when he, went after the train, that in a locomotive, well, our guys destroyed 57 locomotives. So a number of guys did that kind of thing. When he dove down on the ship and the ship exploded, our guys did sink a destroyer, but actually there were 6 guys that made passes on that ship. And there's they have a gun camera on the ship. Whenever you fire the guns, the camera takes a picture of whatever's out there.
Mm-hmm.
So they had photographic proof that the guys blew up a destroyer.
Yeah,
so they were also asking about the characters, who played what part and so forth. Terrence Howard played the part of Benjamin O. Davis, Jr., who was the commander of the Red Tail Group, the 332nd Fighter Group. And Cuba Gooding played the part of a guy named Spanky Roberts, who was a deputy commander while Colonel Davis was away in the States.
Mm-hmm. I was aware from listening to you and your compatriots talk to me when I had you on the radio, and then I saw a two-part program that Tony Brown did on you, and then I've seen some other things. So I was familiar with the story. I think, and I'll say this, the factual battle scenes were accurate. I wasn't that thrilled at the portrayal of the airmen, because I think in a way they did a disservice, because you were presented as undisciplined. And this, I mean, because I know that Mr. Davis would not have tolerated that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So any comment on that?
Well, the guys were relaxed. The guys interacted with each other many times, jovially. I do not know if a person had a drinking problem.
Right.
That is a drinking problem. Now, the guys did drink, but I don't know of a guy who had to get braced up in order, have a drink in order to go on a flight, or out of control with his drinking. I don't know of anyone who had that problem.
Mm-hmm.
But the guys certainly did. I mean, you're in combat, you're,
right.
The life every cotton picking day. Yeah, a lot of raunchy stuff went on. But the guys did, they did their job.
How many decorations and commendations did the units that actually went overseas and actually participated in combat earn?
Well, the group received 3 presidential unit citations. Now, let me pick up a book here to read off some of the medals and awards that the guys received. But the group had... And that one flight to Berlin, They got a President's Unity citation for that because they went well over and beyond, you know, the time and their assignment. But the guys received, let me just flip a page here. There's a book entitled, a number of all kinds of books about Tuskegee Airmen, dozens and dozens of them. But at the end of 1945, the guys had received one Legion of Merit, one Silver Star, two Soldier Medals, eight Purple Hearts, 95 Distinguished Flying Crosses, 14 Bronze Stars, 744 Air Medals and Clusters, and 150 Distinguished Flying Crosses. Now, that was as of June of 1945.
Mm-hmm.
Later, the other guys, you know, other guys were awarded them. You know, when they found out, June of 45, the war just ended. And you have to uncover a lot of records and stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Your son followed in your footsteps. Is he still he's still an active pilot? Because I knew he was flying commercially.
Yes, he still flies with American Airlines. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
As a matter of fact, I had a chance to be one of his passengers on a flight to France. When the movie Band of Brothers came out, they took the veterans of that group back to France, back to Normandy. So then it was maybe the 57th anniversary of D-Day. And my son was the captain of the 777 that flew those guys back to France. There were, 285 people on that plane and two people of color. My son, the captain, and myself.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
I was able to stay in France for a week as a guest of the HBO and American Airlines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, HBO did that first Tuskegee Airmen.
Right, yeah, I saw that.
Came out in 1995.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And one of our guys wrote the story for that movie, a guy named Robert Williams, who was involved in Hollywood in movies and so forth. He wrote the story finished writing the story in 1950. But it took him 45 years to find a company to make a movie about the heroic black men.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until 1995 that movie came out.
But for Lucas's film, some of your compatriots served as technical advisors. So
yes, they were.
How many were involved with the
I know
production.
Of four. There could have been more.
Mm-hmm.
But Lee Archer, who was one of our aces, he was there. Roscoe Brown, the guy who shot down, who was the first one guy to shoot down a German jet. Bill Holloman, and who was the fourth guy? I can't think of the fourth guy's name at the moment. But they were in the film was filmed over in Croatia at an abandoned Russian base, and those guys were over there, associating and instructing the actors,
mm-hmm.
as to how things were done and you know how you fly and that kind of thing, you know, so the actors could be as natural as possible. And George Lucas even I think the chapter early on got $25,000. And I think some ticket money will go to the organization, you know, to our scholarship fund,
mm-hmm.
from Lucas. Mm-hmm.
Overall, were you satisfied with the film?
Oh yes, quite satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some of the script could have been a little different, but Lucas was making this film for teenage boys, so the. Sophistication and academic stuff wasn't that important for him.
Yeah, no, I understand how he wanted to use a lot of the money for the special effects, and nowadays with computer generated imagery and the animation and types of the special
right.
effects that they use, they could actually better portray it. Whereas the 1995 movie. They used actual footage from some of the gun cameras and some of the film that was available during that time, but
yes,
marketing to young people who are, have access to Xbox and those kind of video games and those real sophisticated computer graphics, he really would have to have done something,
mm-hmm.
particularly, you know, marketing to that group. Some older folks, he could have done something differently, but my fault of the film was that there was very little backstory. It almost assumed that people knew the history of Molten Field. They assumed that people knew the history of the struggle for black aviators, and I don't think that's necessarily the case. You know,
right. Now, he plans a prequel and a sequel. He said that if this if Red Tails does well, then I think he said Spike Lee will do a prequel, and I think a guy named Sheldon would do a sequel. So the story continues.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know he did the documentary Double V, because I saw part of that.
Yeah.
Just happened to be flipping. I just happened to be flipping the channel one day, and I saw the end of it. And I think that is a seminal story and a seminal piece that has to be told, because, in fact, that was a double campaign, because
it wasn't like for Courier.
I think the History Channel is going to show that maybe once or twice more, so I'm hoping more people will see that, and so they'll have a better idea what the men, what shaped these men, and what they went through. Yeah.
Yes.
Because I think that the HBO special focused more on the characters, what you guys were like. Most of you, a lot of you had, were college-educated men
right.
of principle, men of purpose, men of determination to not just fight for the country, but to make the country better. And
yes.
I don't see that in Mr. Lucas's film.
Well, you're right. In this current film, it wasn't there. It wasn't there. But as I said, you know, for teenage boys.
I understand that.
I'm looking forward to the, you know, the prequel and the sequel whenever those do come out.
Mm-hmm. Well, my point is that we as a people are so needy for positive portrayals and a full understanding of our history, because we just don't get it. And,
that's right, we don't. Mm-hmm.
So, but again, but
there's so much out there in books.
Yep, yeah. So what's on the agenda for the Philadelphia chapter of the Tuskegee Airmen, as well as the national organization?
Well, we're currently fulfilling a lot of requests, you know, for appearances.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you are. Yeah.
And I'm sure people nationally are doing the same thing. You know, my calendar is full. I have little different colored stickies on dates for the calendar. The thing looks like a porcupine.
Yeah, I didn't think I would be able to get. I knew I'd get through to you, but I didn't think you'd be available. You know, I figured you'd be doing 2 and 3 appearances a day almost.
Well, it just happens that there was a cancellation for today.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the next 3 and then plus tomorrow. Let's see, tomorrow there are 2 things. This is tomorrow. I even lose track of the dates. Tomorrow's the 8th, correct? No, there are 2 things on the 9th, and then I'll be going to Connecticut for the 10th, a presentation on the 10th. The Sikorsky Company has a... Well, they want a program entitled Blacks and Military Aviation, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
What are they called? African-American form, Blacks in Aviation.
How?
And I'll be the main speaker for that up in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, how far do you travel? Are you basically limiting yourself to the Mid-Atlantic and the Northeast, or were you and your members?
I go wherever. I've been to Canada, Haiti, Kosovo. I'm actually supposed to go to Rome later, sometime later this month.
Mm-hmm. Well, give us a contact number or email for you in case somebody hears this and wants to follow up and invite you to.
Well, my email is erich360@aol.com.
All right, give that again.
Of course, erich360@aol.com. And, of course, there are fees attached, appropriate speaker fees and expenses attached. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's a given. Plus, you're bringing some memorabilia. I saw pictures of the screening last week, I believe, and you had some of your photos from your class, from your graduation, and some other memorabilia there. So all of that would be part and parcel of anything.
Well,
that you
let me say this, Junius, if I may. In April 7th and 8th, the Black History Showcase will be at the Convention Center.
Yeah. In Philadelphia.
And we will be Philadelphia, yes. April 7th and 8th. That's a Saturday, and I guess it's Easter Sunday. Yes, Saturday and Easter Sunday. We'll be there all day, along with other Black History persons.
I think the Buffalo Soldiers. Will be there. Yeah, the Buffalo Soldiers and quite a number of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a good move by Everett, especially after what happened to you guys 2 years ago with the blizzard.
Yeah, snowed out, and they said, man, let's get away from this snow stuff.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But people still came out, though.
They did. Yeah. Yes, they did. We have beautiful T-shirts made celebrating Red Tails, shirts and caps, so they'll be able to, plus books. We have loads of books about the history of Tuskegee gear.
Now, what books would you recommend as a former principal, educator, what are some of the books that you would recommend that our listeners get and read?
Well, there's one titled Tuskegee Airmen. There's another one titled Lonely Eagles. That was actually the first one published, Lonely Eagles. There's one titled Black Knights, Blue Skies, Black Wings. And there's one, Red Tails, Black Wings, that I haven't been able to find. I think it's out of print. Haven't been able to find that.
Mm-hmm.
And there are all kinds of magazine articles and things that have been written about, Tuskegee gear.
Now,
are
your conventions open to the public?
Yes.
When's the next one?
The next one is in the first week in August out in Las Vegas.
Okay. All right, now all that information for that would be on the national website, right?
Yes, it will be, Yes.
Okay. Well, give us that URL again, the website.
Oh, www.tuskegeeairmen.org.
All right, we're almost out of time. Any parting words of wisdom and experience you want to share with our listeners about that experience, that part of your life, and or in terms of what you're doing now with the educational piece that the airmen are doing?
Well, I put a couple words together. If young people would only, if we just do something to jack up young people. But education is the elevator. Black youth has to compete with youth all around the world. Chinese, Japanese, Korean, French, Russian. Black people have to compete with all of these different ethnic groups. They are they're highly motivated by education. And if we're not motivated by education, we will always be on the bottom, shooting up each other and that kind of nonsense. But education is the elevator. And there's a dirty four-letter word that I have to put out. That's READ. I'm sure your wife loves that one.
Yeah. Okay, Doc, it's always good talking to you. Say hello to your lovely wife for me. And
I certainly will, Junius. Great talking with you also.
I know you're going to be jam-packed this month. So
yeah.
I look to... your buddy's going to be honored later in the month, so I know you'll be there. Yeah, Judge Davis.
Yes.
If I don't see you any sooner, I will definitely see you at that event.
All right. Well, thanks again, Junius.
Hey, man, thank you.
Sure. All right. Goodbye.
All right. As I was speaking to Dr. Richardson, I asked him about some books that he could recommend, and I highly recommend a book entitled Tuskegee Airmen, Images of America, the Tuskegee Airmen, Lynn M. Holman and Thomas Riley. It's published by Arcadia, and it's basically a pictorial of Tuskegee Airmen. It shows the whole gamut from what was going on in Tuskegee, the early aviators, what was happening at the training. Mostly pictures, pictorial, so you get a chance to see what they look like, the type of rigors that they endured, and the whole process. Not just the Red Tails, but also the support people, the bombardiers, the social life, some of the things that they were doing, the lifestyle, and you get an insight in what was going on. There's a lot of pictures of men and women at the, again, because the film Red Tail just focused on that segment that went overseas and actually participated in the war. That, like I told Doc Richardson, there was no backstory, and you didn't get to see the support, you didn't get to see the struggles that they went through, but also the camaraderie and the esprit de corps, how that was developed, the support. This book has numerous pictures of women who were supporters of the Tuskegee, like Doc talked about, in terms of support people, personnel. So you can get information on the internet, online, but also you can get a lot of information in the books, in addition to the books that Doc Richardson suggested. I suggest the Tuskegee Airmen, Image of America by Lynn M. Holman and Thomas Riley. Also, go see the film. I did not particularly appreciate the way the men were depicted, but nonetheless, it is an opportunity to see what happened in a modern and very well depicted story, depictions in terms of the battle scenes, the aerial scenes, the dogfights, what they had to do. And like I said, I had issues with the portrayal of the men being less than disciplined in terms of following orders and taking undue risks. But that's a personal opinion. Don't go by me. Go see the film so you can get it, some insight. Also, you can purchase the HBO film on DVD. Just look that up, Tuskegee Airmen, HBO. There's the Double V documentary, accompanying documentary that was also produced by George Lucas. I encourage you to check that out. I didn't see the whole thing. I saw about the last 20 minutes of it. Talks about the whole story. So don't just go by Hollywood. Look at the facts. Listen to it if you get a chance to go and meet some of the Tuskegee Airmen, because they're dying off. Do it. And as we close out, remind you to free your mind. The rest will follow. Always engage in mental decolonization. Till next time, stay strong.
Cyberspace is a place that no army with artillery can raise. No military...
You've been listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind, on the Blake Radio Network with Junius Ricardo Stanton. Thank you for logging on. We invite you to tune in again and engage in mental decolonization. Free your mind, the rest will follow.
That no corporation incorporates, no denomination faith dominates, and no court is going to try anything.